I've noticed that talking about research is a much less effective debate tool than actually doing research. Unless by some great good fortune a topic happens to fall into your area of expertise, there is probably a need to go out and learn something about that topic, often from the ground up. But, of course, life is short, and research is work, and sometimes it's easier to watch TV and sleep late and generally find other ways to spend one's time. As a result, you will lose your debate rounds, usually to people who did do the research. The initial determination of whether to embrace a work ethic or a goofball ethic is entirely a student's own choice. The goofball ethic is fairly unrewarding, though, and given that most people who are initially attracted to debate have some belief in their own inherent intelligence and want to exercise it a bit, the choice of the goofball ethic is a little hard to fathom. Why would people want to lose, as they inevitably will if they don't do the background work? I suspect that chief among the reasons people drop from the activity after a year or two is that you can just lose so much, and while everything under the sun will be blamed for those losses other than their own lack of preparedness, it's ultimately the goofball ethic that results in another foreign Sisyphean biting the dust. On the bright side, of course, as juniors and seniors, they have nothing to interfere with their attempts to memorize every nuance of the office. What else do they have to do with their spare time? In policy and extemp, where research is the backbone of the event, and it's pretty obvious from the get-go that endless research is de rigueur, there is probably not much of a problem understanding the need to do it, and for that matter, the need to hit the road if you don't intend to do it. You won't last for more than a week or two, I would venture, if you're not up to the task. In Lincoln Douglas, I think it may be a little harder for people to perceive how important it is to do research. Take the preemptive strike against nuclear proliferation resolution, for example. You could conceivably concentrate your energy entirely on the justice side of the argumentation and never learn much more about the actual subject than the card you borrowed from a teammate on the effects of nuclear bombs. And this is despite the fact that the topic area is important, current, complex, and, well, frankly, fascinating. To wit, the U.S. has been in what you might call the resolutional position since 1943, when the Soviet weapons program was inaugurated. Lines of argumentation for both sides of the resolution come from Russia, Korea, India, Pakistan, Iraq. Tonight's dessert, yellow cake. Israel, South Africa, Libya, China, Japan, yeah, I know, but there's solid content in their anti-nuke position. And maybe even France and England. But you've got to know their stories. You've got to find out about them and derive the lessons those stories tell. You've got to do the research. Or maybe not. Maybe writing a case that is 75% framework and 25% theory is good enough. That way, you can avoid meaningful argumentation altogether about a subject that may be among the most important facing the contemporary world. Sounds like a good educational choice to me, Coach. No wonder so many debaters don't want to be judged by seriously competent lay judges, that is, lawyers and business executives and federal court judges and the like, who, given the choice, would want to be evaluated by a seriously intelligent adjudicator on a subject of high interest when they are running a case bearing no relationship to that subject. Ah, digressive debate. Gotta love it. In public forum, the situation is clearer. No research, no victory. The activity, at least at the moment, has no body of digression or theory or malarkey to hide the fact that you are presented with a proposition of current political merit that you must either negate or affirm. And you don't have much time to do it, so you'd better grab it by the horns and have at it or you're dead in the water. Not arguing the resolution is not an option. And the resolution is announced one day, then maybe 28 days later you're debating it. Zip, zap, zoom. But the problem is, at least at the moment for some of us, that we are coming out of an LD mentality into the public forum world. I believe, at least for now, that it makes some sense for students to first spend a year learning basic debate principles in the forge of LD before doing PF. That just seems to make sense to me. And of course, since public forum is still in its youth, most of the coaches still come from some other background. Probably more often LD than speech, but I do detect changes in that. In any case, the public forum folks don't necessarily yet have the discipline or training or mindset to grasp the research needs of the activity until it's too late, after they've lost to someone who has gotten that discipline or training or mindset. As students and as coaches, we need to learn how to do the research both individually and systematically. That is, given the fact that the starting gun goes off and we're tossed into the thick of it almost immediately, while debating in the thick of last month's resolution, we've got to master the balancing act and get the job done, and we've got to do it fast and efficiently. Okay, step one. In what I just said, I whined about the lack of research that is abroad in parts of the debate world. And as I said, the nature of research is different in the different activities. I won't address research issues and policy because I'm not in that particular business, but it is interesting to point out that, as I understand it, the origin of critiques in policy is tied into the inability of smaller programs to compete with the research gathering abilities of larger programs. That is, they arose as an attempt to level the playing field, as compared to their use in Lincoln Douglas, where they arose as an attempt to disrupt the playing field. Interesting, but I digress. So we'll stick to Lincoln Douglas and public forum. These do require different approaches, but there are some overlaps, and the first step, for the most part, is entirely identical. So we'll start at the beginning in that overlap. Knowledge on a subject does not accrue in a vacuum. I would like to be able to come up with some clever analogy, but the obvious are the best. To build a house, you need a foundation. A foundation is solid and firm and, in fact, can support all different kinds of houses. You can build a raised ranch, a colonial, a nifty little modernist number, whatever, on the exact same foundation. But without that foundation to provide support, you take your chances that the structure will be able to hold the building up. It certainly won't withstand a hurricane. Or, to look at it another way, you can't improvise on a musical instrument until you know how to play it in the first place. For that matter, you can't do variations on a theme unless you know the theme. You gotta pay your dues if you wanna play the blues, Jack. So, the foundation we are trying to build in public forum and in Lincoln Douglas is that of general knowledge of political, social events around the world. We need to know the important things that are happening, especially those important things that revolve around human rights issues and civil rights issues, foreign policy and law, to name the first categories that come to mind. The National Forensic League has just released topics on the United States primary election process for public forum and punishment for hate crimes in Lincoln Douglas. Considering that the primary process has been going on now for about a year, making the 2008 election almost literally a two-year cycle, your having been paying attention throughout 2007 would definitely have been to your advantage on this topic. As for the hate crimes resolution, this is more philosophical in the legal sense than dependent on any particular news events, but nevertheless it is a current event subject that does come up regularly. For my team, as it turns out, we are absolutely in the midst of a recent hate crime situation involving students at our school, but other students are not particularly far from these sorts of incidents, or at least knowledge of them. To maintain the necessary foundation of general knowledge for public forum and Lincoln Douglas, I make two recommendations. Perhaps one of the two will suffice, but I suggest that they are complementary and that it is worth doing both of them. And I don't really know of any decent substitute for either of them. First of all, you need to read the news. Every day, in a newspaper. and you need to read a newspaper worth reading. There are sadly few of these, and they don't include local Gannett papers, which I personally enjoy and read for local news and the comics, but that's the extent of their reach. It doesn't include USA Today, or even a number of second-tier major metropolitan newspapers. It also doesn't include reading newspapers online, except as an absolute last resort. The experience of getting news from a newspaper is different from getting it on a website. The medium is the message, and you absorb differently from a newspaper than you do from the internet. If nothing else, the serendipity of turning the pages of a newspaper will bring to light different information than will surfing a website. The hyperlink experience tends to be subjectively selective, while the page-turning experience is objectively determined by the publisher of the paper, although still subject to the subjective randomization of your eye actually catching something interesting. In any case, when I say reading the newspaper every day, I mean that literally, and I recommend the Washington Post or the New York Times. I do not say that there are not other newspapers at that level, but I can comfortably point to these two. I'm willing to add others if someone wants to recommend them to me. Forgive my parochialness, but I am where I am. So, read the newspaper every day. And there's a way to do this. You must first read every headline on page one. And if the story is of interest, read all of that story that is on page one. And if you're still interested in that story, open the paper and finish it. The reason stories are on page one is usually because they are important. There may be a human interest story of some sort there, more entertaining than important. And frankly, I enjoy these and I do often read them through. But the knowledge, bread and butter we're seeking for the debate foundation is elsewhere. Secondly, you must scan all the editorial and opinion pieces, reading fully any of those which provide commentary on issues of general concern. An article suggesting an exit strategy for Iraq, for instance, or the growing presence of China in Africa, would be more important than an article, say, from Maureen Dowd on the latest Hillary Clinton gossip. That is, separate the wheat from the fun. You may like Maureen Dowd, but she's not essential for the Knowledge Foundation. Read her for the entertainment, not for the debate. Thirdly, read the stuff in the paper that you like to read. Reward yourself. If you like sports, read the sports columns. If you like movies and theater, read the reviews. Read the music columns, whatever. Indulge. You've been a good little soldier, and now it's time for some R&R. Overall, you're required newspaper experience should take no more than about half an hour. You can take longer if you really want to go at it, and you can turn all the pages and just read whatever catches your fancy. I tend to do this on days when I'm not rushed, but unfortunately I don't have as many of those days as I would like. You might not either. The second recommendation for building up general knowledge is to listen to the news on NPR. Let's say a half an hour a day. Every day of morning edition or at night, all things considered. It's almost impossible to come up with a good excuse not to listen to the morning show, even if it's just background noise. You might prefer one of those newfangled funky music groups all the kids like nowadays. And while you're turning down that noise, you can also get off my lawn. But don't tell me you can't find a few minutes when you can't have in-depth news analysis on in the background. I promise you, you will absorb some of it, even if you're not listening. And occasionally something will come up and you'll stop what you're doing and you'll pay attention and you will actually get something out of it. And if you're a true right-wing nut and believe that NPR exists entirely to convert the country to communism, then listen to it the way a left-wing nut might watch Fox News just to get your dander up. Between these two media, serious newspaper and serious radio, you will be on your way to building a solid foundation of knowledge of the world around you so that you can actually know what's going on in a lot of places and can begin connecting the dots when the time comes to debate about it. And these recommendations aren't that big a time suck either, because I'm saying a half hour tops on the paper and radio mostly in the background while you're eating your morning gruel with a side of Spam. No debater, to my knowledge, has ever been harmed by either of these media, except that time when Sadako hit John Cruise on the nose with a rolled-up Sunday want ad section, but that had nothing to do with general knowledge, and the less said about it, the better. There is one more basic need that needs to be added for the Lincoln-Douglas debater. Let's assume that the LDR, whose topics change half as often as the public forum debaters, can spend a little less time on their current event studies. Let's posit that, in addition to the above, the public forum guy will read the occasional Time magazine or Newsweek. In contrast, in that time, the LDR has a need to read up on a little basic philosophy of some sort or other. By basic, I do not mean Plato-type elementary, but simply philosophical or sociological works of a general nature that provide analysis of the literal values that LDRs claim to uphold in rounds. That is, the reading of what reputable guides to the subject have said about justice or morality or the place of law in society. Books on ethics or ethical practices, studies of constitutional rights issues, whatever. I'm not saying the LDR needs a steady diet of these, but one every now and then, every couple of months, say, plus another couple over the summer, is a good idea. Some of these books will be difficult, hard, or impossible to read, and most will remain unfinished. But you begin to get a sense of them. You'll get, for instance, more sense of Foucault by reading him than reading a Wikipedia article about him. This is true of everyone. Since you've already evidenced an interest in this sort of stuff by signing up to do LD in the first place, taking it to the next level is not really that much of a stretch. Instead of working on your Nietzsche blocks, read Nietzsche. If nothing else, that reading will inspire you to block him left, right, sideways, and down. Tackle the old Baudrillard. You might enjoy him. And if you do, send me a postcard from Disneyland, the postcard with a picture of the parking lot. Anyhow, you get the drift. Reading the great thinkers, whoever they are, will help you understand their great thoughts, and could even encourage you to have a few great thoughts yourself. So, the serious LDR PF debater's life includes daily newspapers and in-depth news, and the LDR also needs to get involved with texts on ethics, philosophy, and theory, while the PFer probably is going to keep up with Time and Newsweek. All of this will provide the solid foundation on which to build when it comes time to research a specific issue, which we'll discuss next. And the worst case scenario is, well, you'll be generally smarter as a result. In other words, there is no downside whatsoever. Okay, step two, topic-specific research. There are, in essence, two specifics in terms of the actual doing of the research. The first and more important is what to research, and the second and more flexible is how to research. Let's add to this the different needs of LD and PF and try to keep it all straight and meaningful. The first thing that's necessary regarding any resolution is understanding the context of the resolution. No topic exists in a vacuum. There's a history surrounding every topic, and often a precipitating event that has inspired the topic in the first place. For instance, a growing sense that the U.S. might invade Iran, prior to learning that they were not involved in developing a nuclear weapons program, can obviously be seen as the direct antecedent to the recent public forum, the United States would be justified in pursuing military options against Iran topic. And the LD is just for the United States to use military force to prevent the acquisition of nuclear weapons by nations that pose a military threat resolution. As a general rule, the public forum resolutions are pretty specific, and it's easy to see what's being referenced. LD topics might be a little more general. At least at the moment, this is a function of how and when the topics are chosen by the NFL. In the two I just mentioned, one of them specifically says Iran, and the other just says countries that might be doing this. I would imagine that this would remain true going forward, that public forum topics are going to be chosen fairly close to when they're debated as compared to Lincoln-Douglas topics, which are chosen in June at the national finals. So anyhow, let's start with a proposal for a PF plan for research. Okay. to debate a resolution, you need to understand the history of that resolution, that is, the history to which the resolution refers. There's an inherent story behind any resolution, a history, a series of events that have led us to where we are today, which is presumably a point of having to determine how to go forward. Debating, presenting a position explaining how to go forward, requires an understanding of that history of where we have been and how it has brought us to where we are, and often requires a presentation of that history. This is less germane to LD than PF, which often requires some storytelling to set the stage. In the resolution about military options against Iran, for instance, we explain that the history of U.S.-Iran is this, and this is where we are now, and if we pursue military options, this will be the result. Other PF resolutions seem comparable as a general rule. Where we've been and why it's gotten us to this point, the niceties of this point, and why a specific choice or situation is good or bad. So, what to research in this PF context is fairly straightforward. First, you need to research the history of the subject, because in your story slash case, you're going to explain how that history is relevant, having brought us to this point. In the topic that Russia has become a threat to U.S. interests, that history and this point are the end of it, because there is no request for action. In the use of military options against Iran type topic, you must then add material on the what-if side. But in both cases, you start with the history, and you can take this to the bank. If one team sounds as if they really know the relevant history on a subject, and the other team sounds as if they really do not know the relevant history on a subject, the team that knows its stuff will win every single time, period, end of story. If you're talking about Iran, maybe you need to know the series of events from Shah to Ayatollah to Ahmadinejad. If someone mentions the embassy hostage crisis, which may or may not be irrelevant, you can't reply by asking, "Say what?" In other words, step one, research the background history of the resolution. The next part of your case is the explanation of the present situation, that is, the context of the topic. There is probably going to be a specific issue here, and it's probably going to tie into your recommended plan of action if the resolution is asking for one. In the Iran resolution, you would need to know what exactly is happening now between the U.S. and Iran. In the Russia topic, you would need to know what exactly is happening in Russia now that might threaten U.S. interest. Here, you're going to look into the latest events relevant to the area you're researching. Something as clear as, quote, Iran nuclear threat, or Iran threat to U.S., or something like that. Or in the Russia topic, you're going to focus on an area where you think the threat might be, like economics or military or whatever, and look up Russia economic expansion or Russia military threat or whatever other angles you might think promising. Step two, therefore, is context, researching the specifics of the resolution at present. First step was history. Second step, present. If the resolution offers wording to narrow that research, so much the better, but don't count on it. Try different areas. You'll pursue the one that yields the best results. The final part of your case is making it convincing. Why do I believe you? Aside from the fact that you've, well, got a lot of facts at your fingertips. Here I think you need to go beyond those facts to comparable situations and show why the action or analysis you're proposing is the correct action analysis by showing how other situations have been similar. When and where has the U.S. or any other country taken military action in a similar situation to the present-day Iran-U.S. situation? How has that worked out? Obviously, Iraq is a perfect model of comparison, but perhaps other historical examples have worked out better for the other side. Whichever. Proposing your case's conclusion in the light of comparable situations is yet another level of knowledge that will make your position all that much more convincing and make you sound all that much more knowledgeable. Similarly, you might find experts who agree with your proposal or analysis, backing you up with their authority. Step three, therefore, is to research comparable situations and accepted authorities to support your conclusion. History first, present-day context second, people to back you up or examples that back you up third. Let's turn to Lincoln Douglas. LD, which is usually looking for a transcendent justification for action in general, rather than at options in a specific situation, requires a different approach from public forum. The sheer lack of attempting to achieve a value inherently defines the concerns of public forum differently. But don't take the differences I'm suggesting between public forum and Lincoln Douglas too seriously. I don't mean to imply that they always require completely different approaches to research. Much of the approach is always the same or interchangeable in a specific topic, and one might very much require exactly the sort of research I've recommended for the other, but I do feel that the overall approaches will be different, and that the differences are enough for a separation of the two in this lecture. Lincoln Douglas asks if certain actions are right or wrong. And usually these actions can be boiled down to applications in a variety of situations. So while PF asks if we should engage Iran militarily, a question to which a variety of political, military, or philosophical answers could be provided, Lincoln Douglas will ask about preemptive strikes in general. The PF researcher will look specifically at Iran and the U.S. and what's happening between the two, and at whatever else would affect a commander-in-chief's decision to engage. The LD researcher would look at both the concept of preemption and at the possible examples, including Iran. The LDer wants a viable blueprint or action plan for all examples of the given situation. The PFer is looking only at the given situation, but will, of course, compare other meaningful examples. This distinction is thin but real, and it should guide the thinking of the researcher. Step one in the LD research process is exactly the same as public forum, which is to learn the broad historical story behind the resolution. And as in PF, the more you know, the better off you are. Sticking to the example we've been using, the preemptive use of military force when enemy nations are planning to acquire nuclear weapons, at the very least, we would need to research preemptive strikes so that we could analyze them and be able to use them as examples. And we would need to research nations acquiring nuclear weapons, since there's a history of nations throughout the world either acquiring them or not, with the U.S.'s resulting reaction to those acquisitions. And we would need to research, well, nuclear weapons, so we know what's different about them from conventional weapons. Step two is where things start getting different. In Lincoln Douglas, we now have to take a step backwards. Having studied the history, we need to draw lessons from that history to find the similarities and differences in order to detect patterns of practical behavior. That is, we need to derive from the events a set of circumstances to which we can apply principles of action. In this case, we look at all the preemptive strike examples we can find. When did they take place? What happened when they took place? Can we detect patterns? Then, with these thoughts, we need to research the concept of preemptive strike removed from practice. Are there theories of preemptive strike, generally accepted universal practices, some great philosopher who made his fame and fortune in the preemptive strike business? When we had the plea bargaining in exchange for testimony is unjust resolution, we would first try to find some examples of where this actually might have happened. Organized crime, Enron, terrorist. And then step back and look at what we could distill from the examples about the process, and then we would look at the distillations removed from the specific examples. So the second step is to distill the historical real examples down to patterns and theories and general practices, and then to research those patterns and theories and general practices. In addition to enlightening us on the specific issue at hand, we will begin to collect a broad understanding of various areas in general. There are plenty of legal constitutional resolutions, for instance, and as we look at each one, we are putting together pieces of a broader understanding of law for the future, or with a combination of other topics like the January Feb on preemptive strikes. We're building up a sense of just war versus real politics. We go from specifics to generalities and back again whenever we need it. Step three is doing it. The mechanics of research have changed dramatically in the last few years and have changed even more dramatically since my own short pre-computer debating career way back when. And maybe it's safe to say that the mechanics of research will continue to change in the future. Access to research may change, too. It's not inconceivable that all tournaments will, at some future date, not only allow computers in rounds, but will allow those computers to connect whatever they want to connect to, short of cheating. Or maybe my handheld device will be doing whatever it is I need to get done. Whatever. The point is, some things will change, but some things will remain the same, and I'll try to stick to generalities, allowing you to tailor them to the specifics of your own situation, team size, etc. I also won't be explaining things like Boolean logic and how to do better Google searches. They should teach you that in school, and actually they usually do. We're after bigger game here. First of all, if possible, research should be a team effort. Obviously, much research can be done on one's own, but if one does have a team, the sharing of research is clearly beneficial to everyone. Policy people are born knowing this. For some reason, LDers don't recognize this fact. Anyhow, just because you work late at night digging on your PC doesn't mean you can't pass along what you find to your teammates on the next day. Setting up a process for the interchange of data is important. Create shared online folders, perhaps, or figure out a way to pass along printed copies of material, which does seem to waste a lot of paper in this day and age, though. Whatever. And note that holding on to the research past the expiration date of a resolution is also a good idea. The same ideas will come back to haunt you in the future. For instance, the explanation of retributive justice someone uncovered for the plea bargaining topic may be just as useful for the hate crimes topic. Starting out, either alone or as a group, presupposes an elementary understanding of the subject area. That is, we presume that the first thing people will do is individually get their bearings overall. If the topic is Russia as threat, in other words, you would obviously begin by some general and personal research into recent Russian history. This was the first step outlined for both LD and PF before. Before you can do high-level research, you first have to absorb the basics of the subject area. Spend an hour or so on the computer reading through elementary resources like encyclopedias, click around on various links, and go wherever it takes you. This will provide a starting point. Next, decide what exactly you are going to research in depth. If you're doing it as a team project, work together to make a list. If it's just you, a list is still a good idea. With the team, different people could be assigned different areas. This is especially important if you're planning on physically attacking a library, which is a very good idea, especially early in a topic's life. Everybody bumping into one another in the same place looking for the same things doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's say you're researching the U.S. preemptively striking against pre-nuclear enemies. You might decide to research hegemony superpower, international law, geopolitical justice, whatever that is, nuclear proliferation, nuclear versus conventional warfare, just war, preemptive strikes, and analysis of the nuclear fraternity nations vis-a-vis the U.S. Those are a good start. Most topics will have similarly broad areas, as discussed before in the What to Research section. Look for two different things in your research. Look for facts, and look for meaningful opinions. People are always looking for warrants in evidence. A fact is a pretty good warrant. 82% of the population of a country is starving to death would be a convincing warrant for establishing a program to feed them. Meaningful opinions will be materials where someone else has marshaled some facts or warrants and drawn their own conclusions. Given that presumably those opiners are looking roughly at the same facts which you're looking at, you may find good arguments in what they're saying beyond simply cutting a card. that is a former Secretary of State, outlines a rational approach to dealing with preemptive strikes, and using evidence and historical analysis makes a good case for or against. What is stopping you from making that same argument in your case? The idea of doing research to find opinions that can be transmuted into one's own arguments is often overlooked in researching. It's not just about collecting information for cards or warrants. It's about studying the arguments people in the field are making. Most likely, the arguments people in the field are making are the ones you should be running, if you really want to address a resolution in a meaningful way. If you find that you are leaning toward an argument that no one else in a position of rational authority ever seems to be making, for example, that capitalism is inherently evil, therefore all U.S. actions are inherently evil, then you might want to reconsider your position. When collecting evidence, look to the credentials of your source. Few debaters seem to bother to warrant the authority of their sources. That is, they simply throw out some name followed by a quote. What is the name's claim to authority? If I don't know that, and you don't know that, I have to wonder how much weight should be given to the quotation. If a former president of the General Assembly of the United Nations makes a claim, and your Uncle Newt, the one-armed barber from Cleveland, makes a counterclaim, how do I evaluate those claims if I don't have a sense of the authority of those claimants? This is something I see all the time, and it always bothers me. A random quote by some random person has virtually no weight, but no one around seems to care. If you can explain to me why you're validating your source's authority won't be in your favor if your opponent is not validating his or her sources, go for it. I've been waiting for years to hear it. So, what about your actual sources after you type some germane phrase into your Google search box? I'll just throw out a bunch of possibilities, and you can choose among them however it makes sense for that particular topic. Some of this is library-based, some of it is internet-based. Other approaches will be invented the minute I finish writing this, which means they're too new for me to know about. But the drift should be clear. Okay. There's general research guides. These are encyclopedias, reference texts on law or government or politics on whatever. Then there's books on the subject. Short of actually reading a text, which is theoretically your goal with all important sources, but not necessarily always an achievable one, read the introduction and the first and last chapter, which will usually give you an author's theme hypothesis. Keep in mind that books are sorted by categories in library card catalogs. Lots of books are available online as well, or at least lots of introductions and first chapters, which may be more useful than you think. Use Amazon's Look Inside the Book feature. If you're literally holding a book in your hand, look at the index for specific coverage of the topic you're researching, and then consult relevant sections within the text. Next thing to look for is journal articles on the subject. There are some serious and, I'm afraid, costly online journal search tools, and if you have access to these tools, the better for you. If you don't, then consult a list of magazines such as A&L Dailies and try the likely candidates there. That's Arts and Letters Daily. I use that, by the way, as my team's homepage. Most magazines do keep some sort of archive, by the way. So going to, let's say, a philosophical magazine when you want to find out about philosophy, it's not the worst idea, and they probably will have some archived material where you can find something. Okay, and then you have to have philosophy sources. If you're drawing on a particular philosopher, reacquaint yourself with the source material. Don't just say social contract, but go back and read the handful of pages that are relevant in Locke or Rousseau or whoever so that you're truly familiar with the concepts. Sometimes looking at something afresh that you think you know inside and out will lead to new insights. If you're drawing on a new philosopher, take your time to understand the work and make sure you're using it correctly. Read about the philosopher as well as within the philosopher. It might help. From this point on, it's mostly a matter of organizing and sorting the material. Create topic folders, either real or virtual. With each piece of evidence or cutting or article or whatever it is you're storing, clearly indicated without having to spend a lot of time sorting through it. Quick access is very useful if you're actually in a round and need to pull a card of some sort. Eldiers claimed that their evidence is the typing they did of something in their cases, and I have to admit I just am appalled at the thought that when I ask an Eldier for their evidence, they hand me their case. Oh my God. Anyhow, that's about it. I think I've outlined a bunch of ways of handling the research. There are certainly other approaches, and no doubt other more specific tips and hints, but at least this is a start. Quick recap. Read the paper every day, listen to NPR every day. Secondly, look at topics, history, present, other people's opinions. With LD, also look at the history, distill concepts from the history. And remember, when you're quoting somebody, make it somebody who matters. And if they matter all that much, tell us why they matter. Identify your sources. Live long and prosper.